The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
A lot of talk, as you know, in relation to the NATO summit last week. And Trump extracted a commitment from every member state except Spain that they would increase their commitment to NATO spending to 5% of their gross domestic product. And of course, that got my next guest, the well-known and long-established economist Colin McCarthy, Bord Snip, ESRI, UCD, and so many different incarnations. I remember him with DKM, Economic Consultants, back in the 80s. But basically, a man who watches the pennies on behalf of us all, has done the sums to see what that would mean if we were to join NATO. And Colm joins me in studio now. First of all, what's your central point?
Well, people have been jumping up and down about let's preserve Irish neutrality. And they point out to, some notion that we're Pacific pacifist sort of a country and we don't believe in fighting wars and all that sort of stuff. So it's all kind of virtue argument. But nobody seems to have realised the huge amounts of money that we've saved by being neutral. And it's unusual for most people of our generation, Ivan, to think that we owe some of our economic success to Eamon de Valera, who has a reputation for not having been very good at economic management. And the country's economic success dates from in or about the day of his retirement, when Sean Lamass finally got rid of him, about 1960, I think it was, something like that. But De Valera did something quite clever. Now, whether he understood that this was the reason for doing it, I don't know. But he kept Ireland out of military alliances, kept Ireland out of the Second World War. All the small countries in Europe tried to do that. Some of them didn't succeed. Norway got invaded, for example. Denmark got invaded. You just mentioned Denmark a few moments ago. But most of the small countries tried to stay out of it. If the big countries want to have another scrap, they can fire ahead. But an incidental consequence of staying neutral and staying out of NATO was that we didn't have to spend a vast amount of money every year on bombs and bullets and warships and all the rest of it. And I think people just don't understand the magnitudes involved. You mentioned that the NATO countries are now heading for spending 5% of GDP on the military. And I think all of them will. It may take them some years to work up to that. Quite a few of them already spent 3% or figures of that order. And the Spanish are reluctant to spend quite that much, and got a lecture from Donald Trump. We didn't, because we've got a free pass, because nobody cares, basically. But at present, the amount of GDP that we spend on the military is 0.25%. That's the figure for the current year. 5% would be 20 times that. And the amount that we will spend on the military in the year ahead is just under $1.5 billion. So what people are talking about, if they're saying Ireland should give up this neutrality and join NATO, which is the only practical option in this part of the world, you're talking about spending $25 billion a year, every year, on bombs and bullets and uniforms and jet fighters. Simon Harris the other day said, oh, we should build a naval base in Galway to patrol the Atlantic, which the last time I flew over it was a very, very big assignment. So it seems to me that the people who are in favour of staying with neutrality have underplayed the staggering cost of joining military alliances meaningfully. To put it in a bit of perspective, it'd be the equivalent of building a flipping metro link every year, which means not building roads and not fixing bridges and not filling in potholes and not building hospitals.
And
thank you, Eamon de Valera.
Okay. Couple of things from that. Okay. I think it's fairly self-evident, the argument, insofar as that, there was an EU security pact for 2% of GDP, 800 billion in total. And, you know, as part of an EU security pact, leaving aside NATO, everyone said, well, Ireland, are you going to continue to be a freeloader? And that you actually have all the key cables across the Atlantic in terms of cybersecurity. You have huge gas and other energy interconnectors on the Irish Sea. Who do you think is going to defend that if Putin decides to attack? What do you say to that?
Okay. First of all, Ireland's external connections with gas, electricity and telecoms grids are interesting. The one that's vulnerable is the gas pipeline. Gas pipelines are big, and you have to liquefy gas to make it small and manageable. So we could have a problem if somebody ripped into the gas pipeline. A fella did about 35 years ago. Some guy was coming out of the port of Cork and left a sea anchor trailing behind and damaged the Kinsale Head line into Cork. Didn't rupture it, fortunately, but they had to send fellas down to fix it. He was not a Russian submarine, and I don't even know who the guy was. But gas pipelines are vulnerable. Electricity interconnectors are buried, and they're much smaller. And so are these submarine cables for telecoms and all the rest of it. On the latter, there's a fair few of those off the west coast of Ireland. To listen to some people, you'd imagine every single cable between Europe and North America passed by Schley Head. They don't. Second, they don't belong to the government. They belong to the telecoms companies that own them, who employ people to mine them, and they have repair people on standby. These things do get damaged occasionally, and not necessarily by Russian fellas either. But on the specific point about we better patrol the Atlantic ourselves and so on, the current arrangement, if I understand it correctly, is that if any Russian warships turn up off the west coast hanging around, the Royal Air Force send over a couple of jet fighters to hunt them away, which is very decent of them.
Yeah, free gratis.
And at their expense and in their interest. So that this seems to me to be an excellent arrangement.
I get that. But the sort of final point I want to put to you is that I was at a security conference and I was asking the question, what will Putin do? Some people say once he gets the Russian-speaking people in Ukraine, in eastern Ukraine, he'll be happy he has Crimea and that he doesn't have imperialist ambitions to go into Moldova, Poland and so on. Yeah. And someone else got up and said, the only thing Putin understands is a bloody nose, his own nose. Yeah. There has to be a deterrent. If he sees he can't do it with impunity. What's driving all this is the threat of Putin.
Yes.
Do you accept that that's a valid threat?
Yeah, I mean, Russia is now the only rogue state in this part of the world. Serbia was for a while, and the US Air Force put a stop to that. And Serbia is no longer a threat to its neighbours, but they did try to expand their territory by invading nearby countries, including Bosnia and Croatia and so on. what Putin is trying to do is to recreate the Tsarist Empire. And he would quite like to...
What's your assessment of that threat?
Clearly it's a very serious threat every day in the week. That's why there's most of your listeners now have Ukrainian neighbours that they didn't have 10 or 15 years ago. So it's a serious threat. It's particularly serious if you happen to be Finland or Estonia or Poland, for that matter. And those countries will spend a lot more on their military for good reasons. However, if Putin's army gets through Ukraine, which they seem to find very difficult, they then have to get through Poland, Germany, France, presumably England.
Before they get to us?
And by the time they turn up on Sandymount Strand, there'll be only about three of them left.
Is that not a bit selfish for a 27-member state EU?
Yes. It is. And in the EU, there are four countries that are neutral, that are not in NATO. Austria, for historical reasons, goes back to the Austrian state treaty in the 1950s. The other ones that are neutral are Cyprus, which is full of NATO bases. Cyprus is not in NATO, but there are Turkish bases in northern Cyprus and British ones, including British sovereign territory in southern Cyprus. So Cyprus is a NATO base, although it's not in NATO, but that's the way things work. And at the other end of the Mediterranean, Gibraltar is British.
Malta
territory.
Is Malta in Gibraltar?
Well, Malta's in the middle and nobody cares. And there's plenty of NATO bases on Sicily and southern Italy and so on. So I can see the point you're hinting at, and it's an important one. Eventually, somebody will say everybody has to chip in and everybody needs to buy more.
Yeah, books. Because like in NATO, there's a thing called Article 5, if one person is attacked. Yeah. But in Europe, where it's a union of states, there surely is an obligation. If one of the 27 is attacked, it's the same as attacking all of the EU. Surely that's a reasonable...
No, is the fast answer. It's a confederation of sovereign states. That's what the European Union is. And defence is quite clearly a national competence, as they call it. So we're under no obligation, and in particular we're under no treaty commitment to spend a vast amount of money on
the neutrality thing, because a lot of talk about the triple lock, which is you have to have the UN Security Council, the Parliament and the Cabinet, and people are saying, well, the government is saying, you know what, the UN Security Council is a nonsense with the veto. You'll never have a peacekeeping force and therefore make it a double lock. And there's been murder about that in the door. But on the neutrality question, does it require a referendum to change it?
It possibly does. And if there's a referendum here, and the issue is, would we volunteer to spend 24 or 5 billion per annum on jet fighters and submarines and the devil knows what, then I will definitely vote no to that for the following reason. We don't have that kind of money.
But do you not think as you get older you're becoming a skinflint? Are we always a skinflint?
I was always a skinflint. and it's a great... It's a great pity there weren't more skinflints in your chosen profession down the years. We would have kept out of trouble.
All right. Always a pleasure to speak to Colm McCarthy. Yeah, the thing about Colm is, he, unlike all politicians who tell you what you want to hear, he tells you what you need to know. Thank you for coming into us, Colm.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.